I really appreciate that, since you've never met me before and this could be completely tragic. But that's all right, because I get to leave at the when it's all done. Yes, those of you that are noticing that I might not be from Oklahoma, I am. I'm from Tennessee, is actually where I'm living at present. I live in the Nashville area, and I get to play some songs and hang out with some cool folk, but I'm also a minister of a church there. I am from the Isle of Skye, an island just to the west coast of Scotland. I have an Irish mother and a Scottish father. Therefore, I was born into conflict. But my life is not all that interesting. I'd rather talk about you and your story. So that's where I want to go from here. Let me do a wee bit of science first, because I'm a scientist before I became a musician and all the other stuff. And then, but don't worry, this won't last long. And there's no test. So just, you know, there you are. I used to live in Colorado for a while because my wife's from Colorado, and she always likes for me to bring up that she's American and normal. But we lived out there just beside Pikes Peak, and every so often we go up Pikes Peak. It's 14,174 feet, and we enjoyed it. That was a lot of fun. We'd take friends with us, and those that didn't pass out and die from anoxia on the way up, where, because oxygen's for sissies, let's all be fair. We'd stand up there, and as the night begins to fall, you see all kinds of stars because there are no lights from cities. There's everywhere. And you'd always find, we'd always have one idiot that would do it. I would just wait for the idiot. They will self-reveal after a while. And they'd go, oh, I'm making them English. Oh, look at the stars. They've always been up there, but it seems a bit of a surprise. Oh, there's so many. So far away, so vast. Doesn't it make you feel small? And I always go, no. It's a burning rock. I'm over it. But me, on the other hand, I'm fantastic. And that's when they'd leave, generally speaking, start the trip down. But I want to talk to you about why I say that. We can take, we have an estimate on how many stars there are. We really do. We know nobody's going to check, so it's nice. It's easy to have an estimate, frankly. It's like those people that say there are no two snowflakes alike. Nobody's checking. But we say, we think in the universe there are 10 to the 62nd power atoms. That's a one with 62 zeros after it. You can draw that out sometimes, spend an afternoon putting the commas in. And it's a very impressive number. However, we can take the DNA from any male and any female in this room and make 10 to the 128th power different individuals, no twins, no copies. Now, if you're thinking 10 to the 62nd, 10 to the 128th, that's like twice as many. It's trillions and quadrillions of times more. And all I'm saying is to do this for you. I want you to get this from this. You are far more unique than the universe in which you live. We will see all of these atoms again. They will reproduce. They will spin off. There's fission, there's fusion. We will see these things again. We will not see you again in the history of mankind. All of Earth will pass away and we will not see another you. You must be here for a particular reason. And that's a special thing. But before you can really figure out what role you play, you need to know the game that you're in. When I was a wee boy, my mom's a little Irish lady about that tall. She's kind of a pocket mom. You know, when you need her, you pull her out and you set them amongst them. You know, that sort of thing. And looks like a roaming gnome, only a bit cuter. But my mom used to say, I think you're going to be our Shanachie. Shanachie is a Gaelic word which means a storyteller that holds the people together. And every time I go back into the Highlands of Scotland or go from island to island, I gather the stories and I tell the stories. I still do to the very day. Normally in Gaelic, but we're doing it in English. And this is English, by the way. I don't know what you're saying, but this is English. So let's go from there. I want to tell you a story, but the story sounds very familiar at first, but don't tune out. Because it starts, like all good stories do, with once upon a time, except we put it in the beginning. We don't know anything. The creation story doesn't say, here's how we know there's a God. It doesn't even say, this is what God is like. It just, he's there. He's the ultimate reality. And he has stepped into our world, our dimensions, and he has breathed into it something which has now become the heavens and the earth. And it's a vast and exciting, but we don't know anything about him. So we have to look at what he made. I want you to think about this for a while. You have to know what a person is like by what they leave behind, what they create, because you can't cut them open and see. It has to be their story. So what's God's story? You can tell that he's an artist. He loves color. He loves variety. That's why no two of you are alike. In fact, he likes variety so much. He didn't just make flowers.
He made flowers.
They're everywhere. He didn't just make wee little crawly slimy bits. They're everywhere. He didn't make just little furry bits. They're everywhere. Think about it. Now, God could have done this much more simplistically. He could have made the animal, the plant, and that's it. He's done Monday, noonish. He didn't have to do the rest of that bit because the animal would eat the plant and we would eat the animal. That would be it. We're done. He didn't do that. He kept making more stuff. And he kept making it funny, too. You ever watched what God's made? It's hilarious. There's no reason for a lot of it. There's no reason. Think about it. I can almost see God making the giraffe. Go on. There we go. No, wait. Hang on. There we go. They'll enjoy that one there. Yeah. Now, there's no reason for giraffes. Seriously. There aren't reason. We're glad they're here. I'm not anti-giraffe. I don't lay in my bed at night going, I'm fine. I'm fine with giraffes. But let's be very plain here. If all giraffes vanished, your life would not change that much, except for a wee bit of tear if you like giraffes. The world would go on. But he made it anyway. Made hippopotamuses. That was completely unnecessary. it's kind of like, let's get a rubberized balloon and oh, let's put teeth in the front of it and make it have an attitude. Do you know in Africa, more people are killed by a hippopotamus than any other animal? I know, you're thinking, shouldn't they see it coming? No, actually, they come up from below. And they don't even do the cello music like sharks do, so you don't know they're coming. It's a complete surprise, and I think it's quite unfair, frankly, but there you are. But God, we know he's creative, you know he's playful, we know he's intelligent, we know he's wise. But we also know something went wrong, because God said, it's all good, and then later it wasn't so good. Something went sideways. We don't know much about that, actually. The Bible doesn't say, here's where the devil got the idea of, not so much, I'm going against him. But somewhere down the line, the devil looked at you, looked at the plan, and all of a sudden, we know this from Ezekiel, 2 Peter, and Jude, but it's just hints, and a bit from Job, that you aren't going to love God, that you're not worth the effort. Because he sees God, and God is amazing. He's a rat, that's God. And then he sees you, really. Not much more significant than the bits of dirt we're standing on, frankly, not from his viewpoint. And then God says, I'm going to put that skin on and I'm going to live amongst them and I'm going to die for them. He's going, no, we're not doing that. And so some of the angels rebelled. Remember this, their whole point is that you are not worth it. Their whole point is that you will not obey God or love God or follow God if he turns the blessings off. Because that was the whole thing with Job. You remember that? All right, so let's watch this. This is important because this is your story. Everybody thinks it's the Bible story. No, it's your story. This is playing out in your life right now. It's called move, counter move. Move, counter move. All right, you ready? He makes Adam and Eve. He loves them. That's all mankind right there. All of the world, Adam and Eve, they're wonderful. They're frolicking off there, not wearing anything and having a good time in the garden, which got to be uncomfortable when one might chafe or something. But anyway, they're out there having a good time. And so what does the devil do? He's decided to prove to God that you're not worth it, that you will not follow him. So he works on Eve. And can I have a word about Eve for a bit? Because the way we tell the story is sometimes, and God put Adam to sleep and he woke up and there was Eve, I'm going, what? Ow! And Eve is there, and all of a sudden Eve says, "Hey, would you like a bit of fruit?" Eve was, as Adam was, genetically perfect, which means she would be beautiful, strong, incredibly wise. I would imagine it took a couple hundred years for that serpent to lead Eve down. Doesn't happen all at once. We don't do stupid things all at once. It takes a while to make us do stupid things. We don't ever walk along and, you know what, I'd like to be an addict. That takes work. It takes dedication. It takes time. Yeah. I'd like to be an alcoholic. They don't just give that stuff away. You got to find a way to get it. And then you have to do the supply line and you have to learn how to dress appropriately. It takes a long time. I imagine it took a long time to get to Eve. But Eve, the whole point is he wasn't afraid to go in the garden after her. The devil wasn't. So there's sin. What's God's countermove? Kicks him out of the garden, doesn't he? And all of a sudden, there are all kinds of other pains and the like in our life. But it's not long till we get to Genesis chapter 6, and that's an awful chapter. Because in there, there's a verse that's unlike any other verse in the Bible. It says, every thought of every man's heart was only evil continually. You've got all of those absolutes in one verse. There are no other verses that have that many absolutes in them. You start in Genesis, read all the way to the book of Concordance. They're nothing like this. I've checked. Or even the book of maps. The sometimes times and tables. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it's all there. Everything was awful. The devil had countermoved, and you could almost see him looking at God going, and there you are. There you are. So what does God do? Does God go, well, all right, we'll just wad it up and throw it away. It was a nice idea. No, God picks who you would not pick. He picks the world's worst carpenter. Once you think about this, I know you've seen the pictures and it looks very nice. No, the word there meant a box. It was a box. And he couldn't do one window. Just, can you have one window and one door? Took him 100 years. That's a bad carpenter. I've heard people before, they'll come up to me and they'll say, no, it took him 100 years to gather the animals. Several problems with that. One, you gather an animal and 100 years later, you need another one, right? So that's not it. The Bible actually says God brought all the animals to him. I bet he watched him doing carpentry and went, okay, I'll do the animals. And he brought the animals in. But it's even worse than that. He's a horrible carpenter, but he's also a horrible preacher because he preached for 100 years and the only people that he got to go inside were the ones he started with. No church would hire this guy. No carpentry school. No contractor wants this guy. Worst guy in the world. You got to know this because God will always pick a surprise. He never does what you think he's going to do. They get inside there, and what does he do? He turns the water taps on. He floods the earth. Who saw that coming? I didn't see that coming. I would have thought, a few lightning strikes, a few, stomping around angels, and we all get our act in order. No, God says, you know something? We're starting again. We're erasing the slate. We're holding the Etch-a-Sketch up like this, and it's over. I know that's an old school thing, but I still like an Etch-a-Sketch because, well, I used to play with my granddad quite a bit. Technically, he was dead, but my parents had him cremated and put his ashes in my Etch-a-Sketch. And so we were able to bond that way. And I have a feeling you're not quite used to British humor there. My grandfather is dead, and we did cremate him. In fact, that might be what did it, but the whole point... The point is God erased everything. And you can you imagine the devil going, what? He wiped out everything? And now he starts again? The devil was not afraid, though. Devil did not quit. Countermove. Went right at Noah. Wasn't long before, if you read the story, he got Noah drunk, naked, and stupid. He did. And he divided the family, broke them up, and all of a sudden it's all bad again. When's God going to give up on us? Well, not yet. Countermove. He went to a city that's name was Ur. And that just amazes me. I'd like to have been in that meeting. What are we going to name this place? Okay. I'll see you down the pub, and off they go. But Ur the Chaldees was actually an amazing place. They had rules about how to build your houses and the streets that channeled the desert wind so that the window placements always meant wind was always blowing through your house. Nothing obstructed the wind. It kept everything clean and cooler. They had water tanks on the top of their house. They were made out of adobe and such, but they were up there and the water then would be heated coming down into the house, and they have a stopper. They had running hot water in their houses. They devised algebra and the like, which meant they were evil people. But they devised astronomy. They devised a lot of the sciences that later on developed on this planet. It was an amazing place, but it was also the headquarters of the worship of the moon goddess, whose name was, I kid you not, Sin. God went into the town that worshiped Sin. Is that where you would have started? You know, and he goes right in there, and he doesn't get somebody who knows him. He gets somebody who doesn't, named Abram. He says, I need you to leave everything and go into the desert. Would you? I mean, come on, you've got a $5 million penthouse apartment in Manhattan. And he's saying, I would like you to go into the jungles where you've never been before. Really? Fascinating. Oh, and you have to leave behind all of your culture and everybody you've ever known and loved. Okay. Glad we had this talk. Abram, it takes a long time for God to talk him out of this and move him away. I know we do VBS, so we have to do it really quick. God called Abram, and Abram said, okay, I'm packed. No, it took quite a while. But he got him off. Abram fouled up everything. He did. He wasn't a good daddy. He wasn't a good good husband. He wasn't a good husband to number two, who he threw out twice. I mean, it was awful. And yet, God worked with him. God never picks who you think he's going to pick. I want you to think about that, because there's some people in this room right now who think God will never pick me because I'm too sinful. I have no talents. I'm icky. And I'm going, whoa, prime material for God. That's who he goes for. Read the Old Testament and find me a good, strong person. You can, but they're all women. There are a few women that are pretty good. But the guys are all, what? And it's awful. It's just completely awful. You know, give Samson muscles, what does he do? I like hitting people. No, no. Samson, we need you to do something more productive with this. All the time through, the devil is counter-moving against God. So God now has got Abram and his family, and he builds a nation. And what does the devil do? Counter-moves with famine. Can the devil mess with weather? According to Scripture, he can. And now all of a sudden, they've got to move, but God counter-moves. He gets them down into Egypt, where there's all kinds of food, and the people there like them. Give them the best land, the land of Goshen. And he does it all through that Jacob story that goes forever. I remember once I was in Bible class, and we did a 13-week thing on Joseph. And then I was promoted to the next class, and they started a 13-week thing on Joseph. I was tired of Joseph. But it is a long, complicated story. There he is. He is now in Egypt. They come down. He gets them the best place. They are honored guests. The devil counter moves, and he overthrows the Egyptian government. All of those pharaohs were wiped out. Coming from the west came a new people. They overtook. They even chiseled off the names of the pharaohs. They chiseled new faces on the obelisk and the like to show, no, they're out of history. It's us now. And they turned and looked at the Jews, and they said, there are too many of them. They're too powerful. They're in the best part of our country. We're going to make them slaves. And the horrible evil of slavery hit. The devil had countermoved. So what are we going to do now? Well, you might think it was Moses. Sad he didn't even make the cut on Family Feud. I hope he didn't watch. He'd be up to go, oh. Anyway, he's 40 years old. He's fit at that point. He's very intelligent. He's ready to go. He's muscular. And he sees an Egyptian man beating a Hebrew, and he goes up to him, and he hits him, and he kills the guy. And you might think they'd be going, yay, you saved us. But they're saying, you know, we're going to tell on you. Really? Really? You're going to find people like this. You really are. And so Moses runs. And he runs, and by the way, he didn't run because he was a coward. He ran because it was smart to get out of there. On the way, we know he wasn't a coward, because on the way, he stopped at a water place, and an oasis thing, and there were a bunch of tribesmen that were hassling some women. And he just left in the middle of them and beat them all up and drove them off. And one of the ladies there said, I'd like for you to meet my family. And that's how he got his first wife, and that was pretty cool. And so it's a great story to tell the kids. Now, you might think God should move now. He's got this guy, we're ready. No, not yet. God doesn't do it the way you think he's going to. Never. He waits. Now Moses is 80.
80.
He has been head of sheep for Sinai division for 40 years. Standing there. Have you ever worked with sheep? They're a bit messy. I've had people say, oh, I would like to hug them. Go ahead. You will be greasy because they are covered with grease called a lanolin. Stinks like crazy. And sheep have an exhaust issue. That's rather impressive and extensive in their local area. He's up there this whole time, and God looks at him. He's 80, and he goes, ready. And Moses is going, what? And in fact, Moses disagreed with the plan. God said, right, you remember that place where you're wanted for murder? I want you to go back now. No hiding, just right up to the top guy and say, right, I'm taking away your labor force right now. And Moses is going, or I could do the sheep thing because I'm 80 and there's no ibuprofen for another, 3,000 years to pass. Cause, and I haven't done Pilates in a while. And he's quite, and so even he starts throwing excuses. I would too, wouldn't you? I would be going, okay, but I'm going to need tanks. I'm going to need lots of tanks and air cover and some howitzers. I'm going to need to have some Marines just to come at them for this side. And we'll circle the city and blast them with music like we did. We've done that several times. We want to capture a high-value target. We'll blast them with music, 24-7. Something like, Barry Manilow, they'll kill themselves. And that's a, Lawrence Welk, they think they're already dead and in hell. And so let's do that. And God goes, no, it's all right. Here's a stick. He did. Here you go. That 80-year-old's gone, it's a stick. We don't even know if it was a pointy stick. It might have been a non-pointy stick. He could have gone up to Pharaoh and gone, and nothing, right? And then God tells him, now you have your stick, yeah? Drop it. Okay, it turns into a snake. This is not acceptable protocol for how to train somebody to go in to overthrow a country. But God says, go. God is never going to do it the way you think. It is always a move, counter move. So here, you almost see the guards at Pharaoh's palace. There's a guy coming. No, he's not running. He's got a stick. But, and then he comes and Moses says, let my people go. And Pharaoh goes, let me think about that. No. And move, counter move is what the plagues are. You may not know this. Every one of the plagues was aimed at one of the gods of the Egyptians. They worshipped the River Nile, so he turned it to blood. They couldn't drink from it. They worshipped cattle, long story. He gave them sores and made that awful. They worshipped the sun. He blotted it out. All of these things were. They worshipped a frog-headed god named Heket, who was the god of the midwives, whose job it was to kill the little Hebrew boys. They worshiped that frog to the point where killing a frog was a capital offense in Egypt. So God goes, you want frogs? I got frogs. And he sent so many frogs among them that they couldn't sit down, stand up, or move because they'd kill a frog. You know how silly and stupid sin is? Moses went to Pharaoh and go, like the frogs? Going, no, get them out of here. And he says, I can get them out of here. And Pharaoh goes, well, come back and talk to me tomorrow about that. Really? One more night with the frogs? That's what it's going to take? But that's the way we've always been. We'll say, no, you shouldn't drink or drive, but we let bars have parking lots. We're stupid. We've always been stupid. We've always, first shiny thing comes through, okay, and we just run after it, and we get ourselves, destroyed. Well, here we go. God's killed all of those gods. It's like high noon calling out in the middle of a Western. That one's gone next. And of course, six-shooter, you have to reload because there's more plagues than that. But he got them all done. And then he takes them out into the wilderness. And Pharaoh, and what is the devil doing? He's telling Pharaoh, you can't let that guy go. He's really shamed you. Go after him. He's going, okay. So now here comes the army. And God, who saw this coming? Let's walk through the water. Now, I don't know if that made that noise, but it separated. Now, I want you to think, I've seen the movie, but understand they had not seen the movie. They hadn't. And they're going, there's fish. And Moses is saying, walk through it. And he's going, really? Oh, you guys go ahead. Anybody got a stick? I'll take on Pharaoh. They get to the other side, and again, people are stupid. Here comes he doesn't go, well, this might be interesting. The Pharaoh just goes, oh, let's charge in there. And then they die. On the other side, now they got to meet God because they'd forgotten God. So he takes them to a mountain. The mountain's shaking like crazy, and it's covered with cloud, and there's sound, fire and lightning on the top, and a big trumpet blast, and all of a sudden, dead quiet. And there's a voice. It's God saying, Moses, come up here. I want to talk to you. You ever wondered what that felt like? Moses who? It's a very common name. Every step he took up there, he was one step closer to being alone with God. And here's the deal. One of these days, you're going to know what he felt like because it's going to be your name. He's going to call us. But it's not bad news if you're a Christian. Anyway, gets up to the top. Does the devil give up then? Are you kidding? He counter moves. Well, Moses is up there getting God writing on a rock thing. Down here, the devil's talking to Aaron, go, you know what would be nice? I like worshiping cows. Could we do that? He's going, okay. And so they build one. And you're going, what? And Moses is coming down off and he's got them all and he's looking at it, seriously? And he gets so mad, he throws down the commandments and breaks them. Breaks all 10 commandments same time. That's pretty horrid. That is. That may be a record. I don't know if it's an Olympic event, but and God looks at it and just goes, come on back up to man. He has to come back up and get them all again. And by the way, there are more than 10. Do you know he got more than 600 up there? We only do the big 10. There are other things about how to wear clothes and how to do stuff that we don't pay attention to. And that's all right. We don't have to, but I just want you to know there's a reason he was up there for a long time. So now he comes down, he might think, all right, now he gets it. No, the devil does not get it yet. He's going to come after him again. He's going to send the Gibeonites. He's going to send the Jezreelites. He's going to send the Philistines. He's going to send everything he's got against them, trying to destroy this little group. Do you know one of the great mysteries of history is why do we have Jews? No, it's not a racial thing. It is a, how did they survive? When was the last time you ran across a Philistine or a Phoenician or Jezreelite or Gibeonite? They're gone. They're all gone. Jews are still here. Hello. Yeah. Why? Because God wouldn't let them be destroyed, but he keeps bringing these people. He brings David, world's worst dad. When you have a series of sons overthrowing you and trying to marry your wives, there might be an issue with your parenting skills. There just might be. I think we should examine it, perhaps. Take a look all the way through. They're a mess, and yet God keeps using them, and the devil keeps coming back. Why was the devil so successful? You might wonder that, because we all look at it and goes, God wins every time. Why does the devil convince us that this time it's going to be him that we need to listen to? And there is one weapon. There is one weapon that we couldn't take away from him, and that was death. You see, there's a thing called death. And whenever you get to my age, the road behind me is far longer than the road ahead of me. And I understand that. I'm a realist. I see how that works. But there comes a time where you start going, I got to hurry. I got to get all my happiness now. And you can do this. This happens to teenagers as well. Where you can be thinking, if I don't get to go to the concert on Friday, my life is over. Because you think, that's it. It's the only concert I'll ever be able to watch and go to, and everything will be awful after that. If I don't get to go to this school, everything's going to be awful. If I don't get to wear those clothes, it's going to... We are convinced by the devil that we're running out of time. And watch it. Here, for example, you may not know this. I try to not brag about it, but I'm a prophet, and I'll prove this to you. This week, Kohl's is going to have a sale. I know. I amaze myself. The reason this is silly is because they're always having a sale, but what do they do? Oh, it's 48 hours only. People go, there won't be socks after this. They're going to be like the giraffes. They're going to be all gone. We got to go get them. And they run. I worked in Detroit for 10 years. Oh, they enjoyed that. So they did. Anyway, I was up there and I would be driving to the hospitals to be working with people. It'd be 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and it's right before Christmas and you'd see a line outside the Coles waiting for them to open up at 6 for the specials. And I'm going, seriously? There will be clothes tomorrow. And somebody would think, there'll be clothes tomorrow? Oh, no. There wasn't a D on the end of that. There'll be clothing available for your purchase. Why do they send you all those ads every week? Because they're trying to panic you. A car ad will come on. It's this weekend only. We'll give you a hot dog and a balloon if you buy a truck. And you're thinking, whoo, $50,000, but I got 2 balloons. I screwed them over. I won that one. Really? Really? Every so often, I'll just sit and look at my wife and say, I saved $58,000 today. And she'll go, why? How'd you do that? I didn't buy a truck. She'll say, you didn't need a truck. I said, that's beside the point, woman. You're supposed to be thanking me. She's a very difficult person. I say that here because she's not going to listen to the recording. She's heard me before. The point being, there's always the move, counter move, and that time, that panic, that death. Guys will look in the mirror one day and realize, wait a minute, I may have peaked. I'm starting to go down the other side now. And I'm looking over at my wife. She's got a few wrinkles on her. Better dump her, go grab a younger model. Really? Because we're panicked. We're panicked with time. Nobody could take away death. Then one night, God invaded the planet. But he didn't do it the way you'd think he would. I mean, one angel in the Old Testament killed 185,000 warriors in one night. That's impressive. He could have sent a few angels. All right, laddies, we're sorting this out. And it would have been quite impressive. They might have played bagpipes, and that usually scares your enemies away. They're running to call the Humane Society saying, somebody's slowly backing over a cat. I can hear it, but I've not yet been able to locate the offender. So that sort of, anyway, if I used to be a shrink, which is good because I'm here for me. And that's, I work with myself quite extensively and that sort of, if ever you got inside my head, you'd pay money to get out. I'll tell you that. I have a lot of time. I only work Sundays. So I have a lot of time to think about this stuff. Here we go. We're panicked. What are we going to do? And God sends a baby. Really? A baby. Oh, let's go further. A baby in the body of a not quite married young lady. Huh. Well, that sounds reasonable. Really, would you have done it that way? Not me. The brigades of heaven would have marched. I would have done some pyrotechnics in the air, wouldn't you? I really would have been. Herod would have just been all of a sudden, hair starts swelling up. And we go, all right, that's it. Who's next then? And we go, oh, fair enough. Somebody needs to clean up Herod, but the rest of us, we will surrender at the moment. God invades. And then who the first witnesses are? Shepherds? They didn't trust shepherds in those days. Shepherds were not allowed to testify in a court of law. And God goes, finds them to be the witness. God will never do what you think he's going to do. If you've got God in the box, you might want to check again. That's not God. He doesn't play your games. Never does. It's an interesting thing, that. Well, now Jesus grows up. We don't know much about what he knew when he knew it. I'm certain when he was 3 years old, he didn't know he was God. Do you want a 3-year-old that knows they're God? That would not be ideal. Mary's trying to give him a bath. He keeps popping up on top of the water. Right? She's saying, you've got to eat your Brussels sprouts. And he goes, really? Really, Mom? The lightning around it. No, so I don't know when, but eventually he knew who he was, but he's only got a certain amount of time. And then one day he's on a mountain. We'd call it a hill. And as he's talking to them, he hears the mob coming below and he walks down to the mob. And I know we've all seen the pictures of him and he's white, which is quite a surprise for a first century Jew. And long blonde hair and looks like a member of the Swedish ski team, quite frankly. Glows a bit like a dollar store nightlight. And the Romans are all looking around saying, well, where's this Jesus? And I'm going, it's the white glowing guy. Can't you tell? With the perfect complexion. He didn't look like that. He looked like a rough guy, like all the other rough guys. He might have had teeth missing, some scars, not a tattoo, because, he didn't need one. But, Mom, I don't know what. you know, try to kill me, I'll be back. I don't know what that's going to be. But he walks down to them. He says, who are you looking for? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And he said, that's me. And whatever he looked like, it frightened them enough to where they fell down trying to get away from him. He had to give himself up twice. And then the devil threw everything he had at him. Whips, humiliation. You see, you stripped them naked back then when you beat them with the whips. And so there wasn't any cloth. And then whenever you finally got to all these, this for a day, going back and forth, being beaten, being whipped, then they put you on the cross. And I know you've seen the pictures, but the crosses were never up high. The feet would never have been higher than this because they wanted them down at your level. They wanted you to see the pain. They wanted them to be humiliated. They'd drop it into a hole to make more pain on you, and then they'd lean it forward so that you're pulling on the wounds. I'm not trying to be gross here. I'm just trying to show what the devil went for. And he's saying, you want this? Is that what you want? Are they worth this? He threw everything he had at him, but he didn't know that he was fallen into Jesus's plan. He thought he knew what God would do next. He didn't. Eventually, Jesus forgives everybody there. He pulls himself up on his wounded hands and says, it's finished. That's another Aramaic way of basically saying, let's go. And where'd he go? I've had people say, well, he died. He went to heaven for a few days. No, he didn't. Because later, when Mary hugs him, he says, I've not yet been to my father. Where was he? Peter says he's preached to the spirits in prison. You know what that means? Nobody else does either. And if you think you do, you're wrong. Nobody knows what I'm pretty sure even Peter was thinking, what was I thinking? He was somewhere, but I do know this. When he came back, he had disarmed the devil. He'd gone into the dragon's den and taken away his teeth. And he came back to them and he said, have a look. They can't kill you anymore. The body goes, but you're good. You're good. He took away the weapon against us. So I'm sitting there. People say, oh, this on television is a show you have to see. I prove them wrong. Oh, ta-da. Don't have to. They'll say, no, have you not seen Game of Thrones? No, I've been to my family reunion. That's bad enough. It's kind of like the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. I'm going, this looks oddly familiar. I don't have to do things. I'm not pressured. I can get to walk about and do what I wish to do because I'm here for God. I know God's going to move in my life, but the devil's going to counter move. And that's why I said it's your story. Already in your life, he has been moving and counter moving, hadn't he? You've seen God's movement. For every Mr. Right, ladies, the devil's going to supply a few Mr. Wrongs. Guys, same goes against you. He is always, I bet most of you, had the opportunity suddenly to do something else tonight. Because the devil likes to do that too, saying, you know something? Look at this, woo! And tries to get you there instead, to get your eye turned around the other way. He will always be counter-moving in your life. But remember this, he didn't have a weapon anymore. Because we are saved and we are eternal. And we are forgiven. And you might be thinking, well, I hope I'm forgiven. Let me just run you through it, shall we? Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And have you been baptized? If so, you're going. Get over it. I've had people, they do this fake humility. I'll say, are you going to heaven? And they go, well, I kind of hope so. Seriously? Really? Either Jesus is Jesus and he's going to keep his promise or he's not. Do you trust? I'm not going to be saved because I'm good. No. I'm going to be saved because he is. And he's going to take me. And that's pretty cool. I know that in a lot of churches, I'm going to have to actually move about for this, they do this thing. They put God over here and not necessarily on this side, but God, and he's righteous and he's pure and he's fantastic. He's lovely and all that. And then we go over here and this is you and you're icky, stinky, awful sinner type people. And then you go, how are we ever going to get there? Because, you know, every step along the way, oh, I sang the wrong song. Oh, I forgot to memorize Zechariah. And there you are. And it's kind of like the Monty Python thing where you're always thrown off the bridge before you can get across the thing. So glad that the next generation knows that. I have hope now for the future of mankind. They shall call him Tim. But as he crosses, you know, No, it's not like the old movies. Now, I've got to wrap this up fairly soon because I didn't even look when I started. Now, imagine I'm over time. But when I was a wee boy, you're never to say that to younger folk, I know, but hang with me a bit. When I was a wee boy, Sunday afternoons were death on television. There's nothing. They didn't show sports a lot. Because back, even in America at that time, you would see the game of the week. You could live your entire life and never see your team play on television back in those days. Well, Sunday afternoon, they brought out all the old movies that nobody ever wanted to see. Stupid things. The old Tarzan movies where he'd wrestle a stuffed lion for a while. You know, and then they'd go cut footage of an elephant walking about and then back to him. And you're going, you see the backdrop moving, going, that's not a jungle. And they were racist and everything else, but there was always one scene I always liked, and that is our hero, whether it's Tarzan or one of the Indiana Jones movies, same thing, has seen something he shouldn't have seen or been somewhere he should not have been or touched something that was naughty to touch. And now he has to run away because the natives are restless. And he runs. You know, thinking, whoa. And every so often, just for dramatic effect, he'll even stop for a bit. Oh, and he runs, like I forgot I was being shot at. And then eventually he will come to the edge of a huge chasm. He'll almost fall all the time, a little bit of break away. Go. It's quite high. Oh dear. Now he's got to find a way across. So he finds a way across and he finds a bridge. But this is not a government-approved bridge. This bridge was made when the workers were trying to get home for the weekend, or they came back with a hangover. And that's a really touchy bridge. And he starts going across the bridge. And you know how there's a rule. You get kind of halfway across and it starts to break. Oh, dearie me, what shall I do? I watched the first Indiana Jones movie in Kilmarnock, Scotland, on the southwest of Scotland. We're sitting there, my wife and I. And beside me was this wee old man, he was basically a coat with a hat on. I couldn't really see much of him. But he grabbed my arm. You don't do that in Scotland. We don't touch. You know, and I went, dear. And he looked at me and he goes, do you think he'll make it? And I looked at him and I said, it's 5 minutes in and they've named the movie after him. Play with a sticky floor or something. Too many of us think that from here to heaven is a rope bridge. That's the only way we're going to get there, and it's dangerous. We might not make it. And I'm sorry that preachers give you that idea too, because they're wrong. Our God defanged the devil. And I know you're full of sin. And I know that's not an insult, is it? Because I am. I'm a mess. I thought I'd be better, but now I learned something. When you get older, the temptations are still there. You just don't have the energy. It's kind of like the old dog on the porch. Car goes by and the dog will still every now and then lift his head and go, woof. He wants to chase it, just doesn't really think he can get there in time. So I'm no better than you, but I'm saved. Same way you're saved. Because we don't have a rope bridge to take us there. Jacob once went to sleep and he saw a ladder up into heaven. Do you remember that story? Although the word ladder is not what the Hebrew means there. It means stairway, which I find wonderful that the Bible talks about a stairway to heaven a long time before Led Zeppelin ever got a hold of the concept. So read your Bibles, guys, and come to Nashville and we'll help you play. And so anyway, it's fascinating and wonderful. Later on, Nicodemus would come to Jesus by night and he tells Nicodemus, one of these days, you will see the angels of heaven ascending and descending on me. Jesus is the bridge. He disarmed the devil. He is the bridge. Keep your eyes on him. There will be counter moves. Be ready for them. When it happens, you get to choose who wins in every circumstance. Choose Jesus and then prepare yourself for the next counter move. Doesn't last long, 70, 80, 90 years, and we're all done. And then we have eternity. But that's what warriors do. And you're a warrior in his kingdom. And we fight, our weapon is love. And we keep our eyes forward. God bless you. I'll see you the other side. Cheers.